The show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth, whether you want to hear it or not. It's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Here's your host, Joe Vecchio.
And we're on. It's been a while. I wasn't on last week, and I was supposed to do some of the Memorial Day thing on Monday, but technical difficulties grounded both of them. But I'm here tonight, and I hope you can all call in and listen. The number, of course, is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. I think that's right. 443-2366. 1-800-4-HEAD-ON. How's everybody doing this beautiful Saturday evening here in Atlanta? I don't know how it is in your part of the world. I was going to say in your part of the country, but of course we go all over the world. Thank you, Agnes, for getting things going again tonight, and I'm looking forward to having a real good show. For those of you who don't read my blog regularly, I'm moving to Chicago at the end of June, and I'm doing that for a myriad of reasons. One is job opportunities are much better right there right now. And also a lot of just bad memories here with for myself and my late wife, because, you know, I've got a lot of different issues going on as far as health and stuff is concerned, and the only place I can get them taken care of is the hospital where my wife passed away, and I really have too many bad memories about that, and I'm trying to work on that sort of stuff. But mostly I just needed a change in my life in order to get out of this funk that I've been in. I mentioned breasts a couple of weeks ago, and I'm still under a little bit of a funk, but the move to Chicago is curing a lot of it. Although it's a very difficult move, I can use any help I can get. Any dime you want to drop, just go on the blog and click on the donate link. The blog is cupojoe.blogspot.com. And you know, we weren't real sure up until the last minute. I wasn't real sure if we were going to even be doing a show tonight, and I had a guy who was supposed to come in here and be with me, and he crapped out on me. Phyllis's sister is getting married, so she can't be here. Hang on a second. Let me get a drink of water. So it's really just me for tonight, and so that means I really want you to call in. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON is the number once again, and I really do want you to call in, unless you want to be a troll. In that case, I'll sit here and talk by myself. I don't care much for trolls, and I don't care much for people who just want to come in and be obnoxious. Maybe the other hosts on Head On Radio have more patience with that sort of thing than I do. But there was a post by Digby, and for those of you who aren't familiar with Digby, the name of the blog is it's Hullabaloo, and it's a long name. Just go ahead and go on my blog, cupofjoe.blogspot.com, and click on the Hullabaloo link. And this has been something that's been bandied about from time to time, you know, the whole red state, blue state thing. And when you talk about red states, you're really talking about, for the most part, one area of the country, and that is, of course, the American South. And that is a really, really big area of Republican, conservative. It's a real big stronghold for them. And basically, they have a big cultural ID, and the Republican Party plays into that. There's a sense of exceptionalism about that entire culture, and about everything down here. And the thing about it is, it's a very, very difficult nut to crack. And Digby writes on numerous levels about this, and he talks about when he was watching. Let me read what he wrote. He said he was watching the Country Music Awards, and he saw what looked like a typical bunch of glammed-up pop stars like you'd see in any of the award shows. Lots of cowboy hats, of course, but the haircuts, the clothes, the silicone bodies weren't any different from any other Hollywood production. But the songs weren't. There are plenty of Saturday night honky-tonk fun and straightforward gospel-type religious songs and patriotic tunes, but there's a strain of explicit cultural identification that wins through all of them. And the song that he saw sung by Gretchen Wilson and Merle Haggard, who, by the way, are not even from the South. I found that out. Gretchen Wilson and Merle Haggard are from different places. Wilson is from Illinois, I believe. Haggard is from California. And I bet they don't make a lot of noise about that. But the song they were singing was called Politically Uncorrect. And according to Digby, and according to me too, it perfectly captures the sense of exceptionalism and specialness of Southern culture. Let me read some of the words here. I'm for the low man on the totem pole. I'm for the underdog, God bless his soul. I'm for the guy still pulling third shift and the single mom raising her kids. I'm for the preachers who stay on their knees and for the sinner who finally believes. And I'm for the farmer with dirt in his hands and the soldiers who fight for this land. Now, I want everybody to listen to this and realize that all the things in this country that work against everyone this song just talked about come from the South. I don't understand where they get the idea that they're for the low man on the totem pole when everything they do makes things more difficult for the people on the bottom. You know, you're for the underdog, and you must be for them because you make so many of them. If you look at how the South works harder, Southern people work harder and for less money than anybody else in the country. And that they do. And they say they're for the Bible, they're for the flag, they're for the working man, blah, blah, blah. And then they're just one money, you can't get no respect. Well, you know what? First of all, you're not for the working man. You do everything you can to screw the working people over. When the air traffic controllers all got fired by Reagan, I know you all laughed your asses off down here. You thought, oh, that was so wonderful. And you were so happy because you were dragging jobs from the north down to the south because, you know, lower wages, lower taxes, less regulation. And now you're losing those places to places like Mexico, who are paying workers even less and who have even less regulation and restrictions than they had here in the south. I know there's two big plants here in Atlanta, and again, that's one of the reasons I'm leaving here is just because of the job situation. You have a GM plant up in Doraville, which is north of Atlanta, although within the bounds, and then you have a Ford plant just south over by the airport. And both of those plants are closing down. Now, we're talking about a good 9,000 or 10,000 people, I guess, overall. I'm not sure of the exact number, but there's a lot of people going to lose their jobs. And these are good-paying union jobs. And those jobs are not coming back. They're not coming back. And as tough as I'm having trouble finding work here, it's going to be even harder. So, hence the move to Chicago. Oh, hey, I see. Let's do this. I was going to talk about more on this, but you know what? I don't like to leave callers waiting. So, let's get Gunny from North Dakota on line one. Hi, Gunny. How you doing? You there, Gunny? If you're there, I can't hear you.
Well, I can hear you.
Ah, there you go. I hear you now.
I finally heard that little, you know, that cued me. And he kept saying, Gunny, you there? You there? Well, I'm here. And, you know, you're right on, Joe. You really are. You've been right on since you was Cup of Joe back there all by your lonesome. You know, you're a working man just trying to tell the truth. The people that think they know the truth, you know? And It's funny. It really is. They got their crazy little ideas about whatever, you know. I'm not going to do it tonight. I got kind of off filter the other night, and I just got a little upset with a peep that thought he knew more than everybody else. But, Joe, you speak from the heart. You just speak the truth. And, you know, what you're saying about those in power that hold a very, very large sledgehammer over those of us that are not in power and keep us under some kind of spell. It's like you get it from the news, you get it from the radio, you get it everywhere you turn, you're being inundated with lies. And when you call a liar a liar, they all go bananas on you. They just, you know, go spastic.
Well, they don't have any other choice. I mean, if they admitted they were lying, then they would destroy everything they've been lying about.
Well, yeah, you know, because if you tell them hey, give me some factual evidence of your belief. You know, there goes that word again. I believe, you know, I can believe anything. I can believe in one hand and poo in the other and see which one I fill first. It won't be the one I believe in. I guarantee you that. The thing is, most people don't even stop and think. They just believe what they're told.
You know, and the problem is right now, they're being told. Now, you look at any Democratic candidate, and there have been other sites that have been talking about this, but it's something that, we've picked up on over the last 10 or 15 years or so, ever since Bill Clinton got in office, really. Any Democrat that comes out that gains any kind of prominence is automatically treated like a phony, like they're just a political poser, like there's nothing real about them. No matter how conservative, there are, you know, like John Murtha, for example, decorated war veteran. As soon as he came out and started speaking out against the Iraq war, he was automatically trashed by the right wing and aided by the so-called professional media, who are basically acting like mouthpieces for the Republican Party. So it really doesn't matter who you pick out there; they're gonna get wrecked. And look at the last two Democratic presidents were right.
Joe, my friend, and I think of you as my friend. If I ever met you anywhere, I would know that you and I would be good friends. Did you have a chance, by chance, to hook into Bobby Kennedy's article?
Yes, in fact, I did read that article, and there's nothing I really didn't know beforehand. I mean, we know these guys have been perpetrating electoral fraud for years.
Right. But see, the thing is, okay, there are so many people that have no idea. But this is factual stuff. It's kind of like Al Gore's new documentary that came out, but it's not Al Gore. These are people that are really concerned about our planet, not our nation, not our country, not our jobs, but the atmosphere that you breathe. And they're called what? Conspiracy nuts, because they believe there's something called global warming. Well, let me ask you a question, Joe. I mean, I'm going to ask you a serious question. Have you ever heard of Hurricane Katrina?
Yeah, I think I know a little something about that, yeah.
And was it like a Category 5?
Nastiest hurricane in a season of really nasty hurricanes that they had along the coast.
Five. That was the highest on the scale at the time. Well, guess what? George Bush administration wants to kick the, you know, categories up to Category 6, Category 7, Category 8. You know,
well, they may have to if things keep getting worse.
Yeah, no, they're saying, well, hey, the Category 5, that's a little hurricane. We got some big ones for you. But if, you know, this is where we're going, Joe. You know, into this.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Gunny. They can try to pretend that they can bend reality, but reality always winds up biting you in the ass eventually.
The
you know what I mean?
Category of any hurricane recorded in history was a Cat 5, okay? And now they want to, you know, kind of rewrite history and say, oh, no, we had bigger ones way back when before, you know, before George Bush was president, I guess. Well, but the thing is, Al Gore has come out with a documentary, and people got to wake up and take a look at it and read something other than the New York Times or the Washington Post or whatever. You know,
right, right. The paper of record is no longer the paper of record. They're the paper
of
the
Gray Lady is dead. George Bush killed her. He killed her in 2000.
They were hurting long before George Bush came along, because what happened was they were perpetuating a lot of the BS that was going on about Bill Clinton. I mean, they really pushed on Whitewater, and they bought into every little Republican lie that was said about that, and also about Al Gore, too, even in the 2000 election.
Yeah, but goodness gracious, Joe. They got after they got after Clinton over a BJ. You know, I mean,
and that was long before the BJ they were getting after Bill Clinton. That was long before that.
Yeah, but come on, that was their killing thing. That was a knife in the back of one of the best presidents we've had since. Well, I guess since Jimmy Carter, because Jimmy Carter said it straight. He says, mm-hmm. we have to put we got to get rid of this dependence on oil. We've got to, got to put these solar collectors on our roofs and change over. Now, that was Jimmy Carter, not George W. Pig. Excuse me, I was almost going to say the effing word there. But
you got to be careful.
I was very careful. I was. But that's what that boy is. He's out there with what? He's got a wife, and now he's having a marital affair with a woman that says he's her husband. You know?
Yeah, that's Condoleezza Rice. Randy Rhodes has been talking that up this last week, apparently.
No. Excuse me.
Okay.
No. Well,
don't die on me, Bob.
Hmm?
Don't die on me.
No. Well, I can die any day, and it wouldn't bother me none because, hell, I've been there before. And I'm probably going to go there again. But, hey, Joe, listen, okay? I like you. I love you. You are a... You're a good man. Just keep up your fight and don't take it from the religious right or the or the self-centered, self-energized individual. Just go do your thing. Talk like Cup of Joe, like you've been doing since I heard you before you even had a damn radio show. I mean, that wasn't much. But I used to pick you up every now and then on the internet, and people got to realize that if the internet goes, we're all dead, and ain't nobody gonna resurrect us. You know, they'll dig us up 100,000 years from now and say, "What did these people think to elect that ignorant little pig, and put him in as the most powerful man on the planet Earth?"
Well, let's hope that there are future historians to at least ask that question. I mean, if it gets that bad. Listen, Bob, we got to take a break here. So thanks again for calling.
Well, thank you for listening to my rant. I just enjoy you, Joe. I really do. I have to apologize though, because I came in when you were hot, and it just made me hot. And I have to say, there are people with different beliefs, but they are just that. They're just beliefs. And, hey, if
exactly.
you don't give me facts to cover your belief, shut your mouth, okay? Show me some facts. Show me something that really, really matters, not just your take on it, okay? And, Joe,
well, let's,
you ain't never...
If that were really true, if people really did be quiet rather than say something that wasn't a fact, then we wouldn't have much of anything. Listen, Bob, thanks again for calling. I hate to cut you short, but we got to go to a break.
Hey, Joe, you never cut me short. I'll see you later. Hey, take care,
Bob.
Yeah, bye-bye.
We'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show on the Head On Radio Network.
Was good. Once, Planet Check. Planet Check.
With gas prices skyrocketing at the pump, there is a cheap renewable alternative fuel.
Rudolph Diesel actually designed the diesel engine to run on vegetable oil over 100 years ago.
A diesel engine that runs on used vegetable oil?
We get the used vegetable oil from fast food restaurants.
It's called biodiesel.
I got a biodiesel van.
Joshua Tickle, author of From the Fryer to the Fuel Tank, explains.
Biodiesel is a clean-burning diesel fuel that's actually made from vegetable oil. It's usable in any diesel engine. You don't have to modify the engine. You just pour biodiesel right into it.
Pour some veggie fuel into that tank.
The environmental benefits of biodiesel are that it's cleaner, it's healthy for humans, plants, and animals.
That's Planet Check.
Planet Check is possible thanks to Clif Bar, the energy bar made with organic ingredients by a company committed to sustaining you and the planet. More at cliffbar.com.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask you a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
I'd like to tell you about an attacker and how my friend survived. He was hit in the head by a stroke and left unable to speak. He couldn't believe it was actually happening and didn't know what to do, so he didn't get help right away. And it only got worse. His left side got weak and he was helpless. Thankfully, someone realized what was going on and called 911. If they hadn't, my friend wouldn't be here now. If you're attacked by a stroke, call 911 immediately. The sooner you react, the better your chance of survival. I'm glad that he lived, but we're still praying and working on his recovery. So if it ever happens to you or someone around you, get emergency medical help right away. Don't try to deny it's an attack by a stroke. This is Will Downing, friend of a stroke survivor.
Strokes attack African Americans more often. Find out why. Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org. Time lost is brain lost. A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Cup of Joe radio show here on the Head On Radio Network. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the number to call in is 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON for the Head On Radio Network, and you'll get to speak with lovely Agnes, who is really, really working hard out there in the home studios out in West Virginia, and even harder when you consider that Bob Kincaid is still out in Alabama with dealing with his ill father. And of course, we hope all goes well out there for Bob, and that he gets to come home soon. Where was I talking about? I was talking about the sense of exceptionalness of the Southern culture, and and I had a very big post about it, and I got some people riled at me because of the post, because I talked. It sounded like I was just bashing Southerners, but I really wasn't. And you know, look, I've been down here for about 12 years here in Atlanta, and I've lived in a lot of different places around the country and actually around the world too. And I really understand about as much about Southern culture now, or much about Southern people now, as I did when I first got here. And that is to say, very, very little. I think I need about 10 lifetimes to understand the thought processes behind what goes on down here. Now, that doesn't mean to say that I think all Southerners are, you know, toothless inbred yokels. I mean, obviously, Agnes is not like that. Bob is not like that. I know a lot of people around here. Heck, I was a big supporter of Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter, what you'd call Northern types, you know. And I remember when I worked for NBC during the Olympics. I was a driver for NBC during the Olympics here in 96 in Atlanta. And the insults I heard from NBC employees about Southerners in the South, they made even me feel the need to defend Atlanta. And because most of the entertainment in the country comes from either New York or L.A. and is made by people who have never been down here, I can really understand where they're coming from when they say they're being treated badly. Because there is a kind of tendency to treat them like, you know, they are a bunch of toothless yokels. I mean, I remember there was an episode of Futurama that talked about the undersea city of Atlanta, making a pun on Atlantis. And all the people there were, you know, these banjo strumming yokels. And, you know, Cartoon Network at least thought I know better, although they didn't produce it. Because, you know, they're based down here in Atlanta. You know, hell, I helped build one of their facilities down here. I was in I was doing an audio-video installation there. And, you know, so I can understand that. But by the same token, understanding the resentment they feel in my mind doesn't justify the phoniness and the hypocrisy that's seemingly built in here. Their unwillingness to recognize that there are other people in the country and to appreciate the things that northern liberals did for them, whether we like them or not, like bringing them electricity. Has anybody ever been out here? Do you know what it's like here in the summers? It's miserable. It's hot and it's sticky and it's humid. And the only reason people started coming out here was because of air conditioning. You wouldn't want to come out here without air conditioning. Trust me. And if it wasn't for things like the Tennessee Valley Authority and rural electrification and a lot of the other projects that northern liberals had going that basically started up in the industrial north and they just transplanted throughout the country, there is a lot of places in the south here that would still not have electricity. And I wrote this and I posted this somewhere on a different thing, and I got a guy writing back, well, we're sure happy y'all did that for us. And you know, we're all a bunch of stupid idiots and we wouldn't have had... No, you're not stupid idiots. Okay? Southerners are very, very intelligent people. I've met a lot of Southern people who are extremely intelligent. But they are really, really held back by their culture and their history. And as usual, it got taken the wrong way. There's no way I can do a post like this, regardless of how many disclaimers, without people coming across thinking that, you know, I'm just bashing Southerners. But you have to look at the electoral map, and when people talk about the red states, like I say, you're talking about pretty much the entire South. That's it. Everybody else is a much closer to a shade of blue, or, you know, even if it's a great purple state, that's, you know, if you go county by county, I'm sure that, you know, there's still a lot of liberals and a lot of people still believe in liberal ideas. But you know what? Look at the electoral map and see where the bulk of Republican power is, and that's in the South. And that became that way because of the Civil Rights Act. People forget that, too. And when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, he said straight out, he said, we just gave the South to the Republicans. Because there were a lot of people who were basically voting Democrat, voting for Democrats, just because the Democrats were, back in the Civil War, the party of slavery. And when I listen, it's funny, reading some of the right-wing sites talking about how wonderfully progressive all the Republicans are, and how evil all the Democrats are, it's funny reading their news stories and their history is about, you know, this date in Republican history, blah, blah, blah. All of it goes back to Civil War days. And the Republicans were originally the party of progressives at the turn of the last century. 1890s, early 1900s, Teddy Roosevelt and those people, they were very, you know, they didn't call themselves liberal, but they were the first liberals. They believed very much in the idea of government doing things to help people out. And then, later on, after Roosevelt left the party and the party became once more just totally for big business interests, all those progressives went over to the Democratic side. And ever since 1932, the New Deal years, you know, it was it was solidly Democratic, and the South was solidly Democratic, and they had enough northern states to keep a pretty much of a stranglehold on American politics for 70 years. And while it was hardly perfect, it still was better than what was before. and better than what's going on now, that's for sure. But to continue on to my point, you know, it doesn't justify all the things that they say. It doesn't justify the harsher divisions of race and class that we see down here. It's not that racism and sexism and homophobia doesn't exist in other parts of the country. They do. I'm not denying that. And I'm not pretending that everywhere else is a worker's paradise. But nowhere else is it so open as it is down here. I mean, Atlanta is the biggest, most important city in the entire region. It's basically the New York of the South. It's a city that's too busy to hate. It has the biggest population of any southern city. And some of the biggest corporations in the world, never mind the country, are headquartered down here, Delta Airlines and Coca-Cola. But you have about the lousiest public transportation system of any big city in the country, and that includes L.A., which has a pretty lousy public transportation system. And I think you get the idea of where you're coming from, where MARTA, which is Atlanta's rapid transit, is basically called Moving Africans Rapidly Through Atlanta. I have a lot more to go on this, but I see by the clock on the wall that we're ready to take a little break here. It's the bottom of the hour. And we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe radio show on the Head On Radio Network to talk about all this. Hang on.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad Wally and Doofy are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war.
Bottom line. Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Back on the Cup of Joe radio show. Here we are on the Head On Radio Network. The number to call in is 1-877-443-2366. That's 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. And let's just go right to the phones. Pete, you're on line one. Pull up a chair and have a cup of Joe.
Hey, Joe, I'm so glad you're on the air this evening. Yeah, that's great news. It has been a while since I've heard you.
Well, I'm glad we're on the air too. We've been having a lot of technical issues, but of course we're working hard to solve them and keep them going on.
Yes, sir. I don't get to talk to you very often. I am one of the many helpers that kind of works behind the scenes to kind of keep Head On going. You know, we've just had such huge problems with Verizon lately and regarding broadband service to the studio in West Virginia. You know, they're in a rural area, and the reason I'm calling really is it ties into your comments earlier about. You're talking about electricity being provided to rural areas via the REA or the rural electric, let me just start here. You know, the way they're doing broadband these days and assigning, all the responsibility for wiring areas are giving the private companies like the Sprints and the Verizons and the Bell South permission to handle entire areas. If they did that with electricity, the way that, you know, you're talking about, you know, getting electricity into rural areas in the South, I too live in a rural area. I live 20 miles from the nearest town, kind of in the middle of nowhere. If that were the case, if they were doing it like that, we would still be living in the dark on kerosene. It's just not profitable for these big companies to come in and put service in. And, you know, if you are in a rural area there's a problem. Then you get in the whole issue of, you know, how much they're going to cost to send a technician out there and all this kind of stuff. You know, this thing is just mind-numbing what's happening with, the Republicans handing over control of the Internet to private companies because the private companies block. They will actually send in teams of lawyers to block communities from doing community Internet service. Simply because they're saying it's the government competing with private industry. But at the same time, they will not service that area simply because it's not profitable. They want it both ways. They don't want you to have it, but go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. It's just that when you look at building something big like this kind of infrastructure, this kind of physical infrastructure, whether you're talking about building electricity or phone lines or rail lines and stuff like that, it's not something that can be handled by a big business because, quite frankly, there's nothing really profitable about going out into these rural areas where there's not a lot of people and it's a lot of effort to get them out there. But the government can do that, and then private industry can benefit by it. And there's a lot of Southerners out there that don't seem to recognize that and understand it.
Well, this is absolutely true. And, Joe, I'm one of the ones who lives on the other side of the digital divide. You know, I go into Tallahassee where I have my business and I do all this, you know, and I'm on broadband and high speed. And I come home and I'm on dial-up. I can't begin to tell you. It's like such a total culture shock. I basically can't work from home because the files I have to deal with. You know, I have to, you know, drive 20 miles to go. And there's no interest. You know, we've been promised broadband here for over 3 years. They're not going to deliver. And, you know, just never ceases to amaze me. There's a town not far from here in South Georgia. I'm in North Florida. It's called Thomasville. Now, Thomasville got in under the wire regarding some of these prohibitions against communities providing Internet access. Now, Thomasville, Georgia has wired fiber optic to every little rural, house in the middle of nowhere. They have, high-speed digital cable. They have DSL, you know, to all these areas, and it's the city of Thomasville, Georgia, that's doing it, and it's marvelous. I mean, I can drive to the middle of nowhere in South Georgia near Thomasville and get it, but you know, Tallahassee did not get in under that wire, so Tallahassee is prevented from making an association like this or to to provide it. So, you know, if the Republicans had their way, you know, a huge portion of the country would be sitting in the dark. You know, it just never ceases to amaze me. And you're so right about business would benefit, you know, by letting the government go ahead and there's an interesting issue here, too. This rural electric, I'm on a rural electric association also, and, you know, everybody who's part of that, who gets their power from this REA, is actually a member of the REA. And like at the end of the year, every year you normally get a small check from them as a refund, you know, for any extra money that they had come in. I mean, this is probably a shock to your listeners, but that's the difference between being on a rural electric association and being on something like a PG&E or you know, whoever, you know, provides power to your local area. Can you imagine getting a check back at the end of the year from your power company?
I can't imagine that at all. You know, they just had the Enron trials recently, and of course Ken Lay and Mr. Skilling, Leonard Skilling, I think his name is,
yes,
got convicted. And what they were basically doing what's the word? Dumping, or they were closing down or shutting down reactors to lower the amount of input coming in, so that customers would have to pay a lot more. And they were basically like power stockbrokers. Is that correct? Is that how that worked?
Yes, exactly.
And basically just ripping people off.
Yes, it was exactly how they worked, and they owned it, and they were private business, and not accountable to anyone because their friends were in the White House, and so they just basically pulled the plug. That's what happens.
Do you think they're going to get anything serious for that?
Say again, please.
Well, do you think they're going to get any kind of serious sentencing for that? I mean, they could get as little as 2 years. They could get as much as 25 years.
I certainly hope so. I think it's so high profile that, and so many people publicly lost their entire life savings. I don't see how they can avoid a fairly serious sentence. On the other hand,
you know what's going to happen? I'll tell you what I think is going to happen. I think in 2008, because, you know, unless they really pull something crazy, Bush has to leave after 2008.
Yeah.
After the election in 2008, I think he's just going to go ahead and pardon those guys.
Lord help us. You know, it wouldn't surprise me. I sure hope that, you know, that he can be removed or at least crippled in such a way that he cannot do that. That certainly will be the final low blow. And the media won't bother to tell anybody, or if they do, it'll be on Saturday evening when people are out there with their kids. It'll be lowballed.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the media is in on the whole thing anyway. I mean, if you listen to the way they treat any Democrat, I mean, that was what I was talking about that earlier. Any Democrat that comes to the forefront is going to get slammed. I mean, during the 2004 primaries, I was a Howard Dean guy, and I saw what they were starting to do to him as soon as he started to come up, and once he had the screen thing going on, I knew that was it. And there were people who were Kerry supporters and this and that, and I said, look, it doesn't matter who wins the Democratic nomination, they're going to get slammed, and they're going to get slammed by the right wing, and they're going to be aided by our so-called perfidia.
Absolutely. And have you noticed on the Sunday morning talk shows, I can't call their names right off the top of my head, the ABC, NBC, you know, the morning political talk shows, if they're going to have Republicans on, they can have a whole panel of just Republicans, and boy, they go for it. But if you're going to have a Democrat on the show, it's got to be balanced. They'll have, you know, an equal number of Republicans, an equal number of Democrats, so that basically they both argue and the Republicans bring up completely irrelevant lies, and the whole thing gets negated. But boy, if you're a Republican, you can have a whole panel of them. You don't need equal balance then. You're so right.
Right. And the Democrats that they do have on are guys like, you know, friggin' Joe Lieberman, you know, who might as well be a Republican anyway, and he's probably going to wind up running as an independent because Ned Lamont is kicking his butt.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what we're stuck with, unfortunately. And we've got such, you know, and I keep talking to people about this, that we have such a long, hard road ahead of us. And I hear a lot of people talking about, oh, we're going to do this in 2006, and we're going to do that in 2008. And I'm like, look, you've been saying this stuff for the last 4 or 5 years, you know. What was that old Bugs Bunny cartoon with Robin Hood, where the guy would come and announce that Robin Hood was coming, and finally Bugs said, yeah, you've been saying that through the whole picture. Where is he? Well, you know, people have been saying this stuff through the whole picture. Where are you, you know? And when 2006 rolls around and the Republicans maintain their control of the House and the Senate, and nothing changes, I wonder what's going to be said. And if that happens, you think I'm harsh on some people now, you ain't heard nothing yet. Because I've been predicting this crap for the last 10 years or so, and nobody listens to me. You do, of course. and I'm glad for it.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm so glad you're back. I wanted to share this with you. It's only like three sentences long. It's marvelous. It was sent to me in email today from someone from the head-on chat, and it's hysterically funny. There's a guy who's in Texas, and he strikes up a conversation with a Texan, and he asked the Texan what he thought about Bush's transition from the governorship to the White House, and the old Texan said, "Well, you know, Bush is a post turtle." That's POST, a post turtle. And the guy, you know, didn't know what it meant, and he said, "Post turtle?" And so the rancher said, "Well, you know, when you're driving down a country road and you come across a fence post and there's a turtle balanced on top of the fence post, that's a post turtle." And the, you know, the guy just looked at him. He was puzzled. And the farmer goes on, the rancher goes on and says, "Well, this is what it is. You know, he didn't get there by himself. He doesn't belong there. He doesn't know what to do while he's up there, and all you want to do is just help get the poor dumb blank down."
Yeah, that's booked all right.
He is a post turtle, dude. Didn't get there by himself, and he doesn't know what to do up there, and we just need to get him down.
You know, and that was, as I said before, if there's somebody to write about this in the future, they're going to wonder how we went from great statesmen and people like Franklin Delano Roosevelt to George W. Bush and the space of just a few years, you know, about 50 or 60 years. It's
Lord, yes. I'm in my 50s, and I remember a time when the world was far more liberal and open than this, and we're going backwards as fast as we can pedal.
And unfortunately, things are going to get worse before they get better. Pete, I gotta let you go because we've got to take a break.
Thank you
much for calling.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, buddy.
No problem. You take care.
Good night.
Okay, we're going to hit the middle of the three quarters of the hour here, and we'll be back with more of the Cup of Joe radio show here on the Head On Radio Network.
The Head On Radio Network special report. This is Agnes Kincaid. Verizon seems to be having massive connectivity problems all over the United States. The areas affected are Lake Isabella, California, New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Massachusetts. Also included in that lineup is the undisclosed location here in West Virginia. Verizon spokespeople, when asked what the problem was, replied, "They weren't sure, but they were on it."
Welcome to Verizon. You've reached Verizon Online Business Center. You're at the main menu. To start over at any time, say main menu. Which are you calling about, tech support, your account, or orders? At this time, Verizon DSL customers in the following states: New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. may be experiencing difficulties accessing the Internet. Our engineers are aware of this issue and are working toward a resolution. If you would still like to speak with a technical support representative, please remain on the line.
Tune in tomorrow night at 8 p.m. for Cup of Joe with Joe Vecchio, and at 10 p.m. for Fourth Estate with your hosts John Fox and Bruce Birch. At that time, hopefully Verizon will have been on it and fixed it. This has been a special report from the Head On Radio News Network.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being
having a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Back on the head on the Cup of Joe radio show here on the Head On Radio Network. Once again, the number to call in is 1-877-443-2366. And let's just go right back to the phones here. Ed's on line two. Ed, hi. Pull up a chair and have a cup of Joe.
Howdy. How are you doing?
Fine. What are you washing your hands there?
I was washing my wife's leftover dishes.
Okay.
No. But I just wanted to tell you, you know, how much you all are appreciated. You know, you and Bob and all the guys like you. And
well, thank you.
I wanted to comment on a couple things. You were talking about Southerners. I never did know for sure what I was, a Southerner or a Northerner, until I went in the Navy and I realized what I was. I met these people from South Carolina and Georgia and down through there. And their concept and their heritage back up exactly what you say. They have a different way of thinking. And I'm wondering if it'll ever be converted. You could pour it in our ears, and it would run out the other side. We have a show here of the morning. It's a conservative, ultra-white right wing. And it's just a pitiful situation that a bunch of people will call in there on issues that are so obvious. We had one guy, for an example, call in and said he would be glad to be the 1% of the people that backed George. But people's caught on to him, and they're seeing people here. They wake up slow, but they have awakened, I believe. So all I can say is, you know, just keep up, you know, your good work, and we'll keep on listening.
Well, Ed, you know, the thing is, I'm not, you know, and what I think a lot of Southerners don't understand is that I'm not their enemy. When I say things like this, I'm just trying to wake them up to the idea that they're being ripped off by the people. And by the way, before I forget, you have some congratulations due because your grandchild graduated from high school, so I wanted to congratulate you on that. That's wonderful, and I'm glad to hear that.
Well, thank you very much.
But you know, it's very, very difficult. Upton Sinclair wrote that it's very, very difficult to get somebody to believe in something when their livelihood depends upon them not believing it. And what's going on with the Republican Party is that they've spent a long time building a society where you basically have to believe what they say, because if you don't, you're going to get hurt. And that's how a lot of these powerful people are. They build societies that make you dependent upon them to, you know, to run their lives.
Yeah, but don't you think that's even worse? You're dealing with a bunch of cowards in addition to their ignorance and gullibility.
Well, it is worse, and that's the problem. I mean, a lot of them, I wish a lot more of them had the courage of their convictions and go to Iraq. I mean, we see so many young guys, young men, and not necessarily Southerners either, but big Republican supporters who, you know, go rah, 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 we want war with Iraq, we want war with Iran, blah, blah, blah. But when you ask them if they want to sign up, they're like, oh, no, I've got other important things to do.
We had a confrontation on the radio down here about that, and what is patriotism? Is patriotism getting our boys killed? Or is patriotism getting them out of there and protecting them and not having no more of them added to the death row and send them over for target practice? And, you know, I can tell you, as a veteran, I totally, I mean, dislike is not the word I would use on George Bush. It goes beyond that. I think he should be I'm not for the Klan, but that's one place where if the Klan would move in and horsewhip him, it would be and that's probably a little bit right of where you think, but I don't think he's nothing too good for people that get other people killed.
Well, the first thing I would like to do is just get them out of power and get them out of position where they can do things like that, where they can send people off to die based on lies or whatever. Whether any punishment comes out of that, to me, that's just icing on the cake. Get them the hell out of power first,
yeah.
And then we deal with it.
Well, keep on preaching your message and, you know, bring up this stuff, you know, because when a hillbilly like myself can see what's going on with this gay issue, then it shouldn't be too hard to get across the point of how come they ain't been able to do what they said they was going to do in 6 years, because they sure haven't moved anywhere on it, but all of a sudden it's become another big issue. But anyway,
right. Well,
Joe, I appreciate you, and really appreciate you and Bob and all the likes of you guys, and keep on plugging along.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Ed. Thanks for being on the show, and I hope you keep on listening to the Head On Network and to my show.
Well, I do. I listen to Bob a lot, and that's not to say it. I haven't listened to you, but I know Bob, and he's just he's what he says he is, and I like that in a person, that they stick to what they believe and not too afraid to come out with it. And the work that they all put in at that station, I know what they've been through to get it going.
Mm-hmm.
So stick in there with them. I don't know what the deal is with y'all, but whatever it is good.
George W's. Remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com? So many Republican hypocrites. Whew. So little time. Catch up with you soon.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hi there, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. You have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on the subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing's still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good.
good man underground.
Head on.
Okay, we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show for the second and final hour here tonight. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. It is just after 9 o'clock here on the East Coast in our airtight First Amendment bunker out here in beautiful Decatur, Georgia. And yeah, I know I've been bashing the South tonight. Not really bashing the South. I mean, Ed was a nice guy, and I wish there were more Southerners like him. And there are a lot more Southerners like him. Unfortunately, they're all in the minority. And when it comes to the people in power, it's the inmates running the asylum. And that's a sad thing to say, because I really do like a lot of things about the South. There are, hell, I'm a big Braves fan. I have been for years. I've been a Braves fan since, 1980. I guess 26 years. So, you know, I like Southern food, and I like the mild winters, certainly. And again, I point out that if it wasn't for air conditioning, I don't think I'd be anywhere near here, because it does get damn hot out here. West Virginia maybe is not so bad, because they're a little further up north, you know, up where Agnes is and all that. But down here in Atlanta, and especially if you go down to New Orleans or further south, I used to live in Orlando, Florida. You know, it gets really, really nasty there. You know, it's funny. You know, and one of the things I talk about Southerners, and Ed kind of sort of brought it up, and it's really, they kind of live in the past a lot. And I grew up in Brooklyn. I grew up in New York City. And when we were growing up in the streets of Brooklyn, we didn't talk about Southerners. We didn't talk about them. What we talked about was mostly sports, and it was mostly, you know, the same. It's pro sports, Mets versus Yankees, Knicks versus Nets, Jets and Giants. There was very little talk about college sports. And I used to kind of sort of make fun of Southerners because they concentrated so much on college sports down here, until, like an idiot, I realized that that's pretty much all they've had. They haven't had the tradition and the history of professional sports down here for long. I mean, the Atlanta Braves have been down here, what, since the mid-60s? And that's not very long at all. When you're talking about baseball, when you have teams that are over 125 years old, like the Cincinnati Reds, you know, but we didn't talk about the South. And when I moved down, when we moved down to Florida, which was a 78, 79, something like that, and, you know, Floridians are still Southerners. I mean, they get a lot of Northern retirees down there, true, but they're still Southerners. And I went down there, and somebody called me a Yankee, and I said, "What the hell are you talking about? I'm a Mets fan." I didn't know what they meant. And it took me a while to understand that. And I realized that they were still living 100 or so years in the past. And I'm like, what's wrong with you? You know, the Civil War was over. And as I learned more and more about history, I just get more and more baffled about why people like that think the way they do. It's not that I don't think people shouldn't have a cultural ID. I mean, hell, I'm from Brooklyn. We've got a very unique cultural ID, but it's pretty much contained to Brooklyn. You know, we don't, Brooklyners don't even like people who live in Manhattan, for crying out loud. But New Yorkers in particular, they have a very specific mindset. So do Bostonians, so do people from Philadelphia, so do people from Chicago, people from L.A., people from Frisco. You know, all these big cities, they all have their own cultural IDs, and that's fine. But if you look at it in the South, it's much more of a big region. Alabamas identify a lot more with Mississippians than a New Yorker would identify even with a Bostonian, for example. And Boston's just you know, a hop, skip, and a jump down the road. But what bothers, and it doesn't really bother me that they have that cultural ID. There's nothing wrong with that. Man, I'm losing my voice tonight. There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's wonderful. I think we need more of that. But the problem is, so much of it is based upon lies, and lies that other people have been telling them. And so much of it is based upon a perceived persecution that doesn't exist. Because you know what? I'm all for you. I mean, I can't speak for every New Yorker, but I'm all for you. I want you to live happy, healthy, prosperous lives. I really, really do. I don't want you to suffer. I don't want you to work harder for less money. I want you to work less for more money. I'm for your businesses. I'm a very pro-business person. I'm a liberal. I'm a capitalist. Liberals are capitalists. They just believe in regulating businesses. They don't want it. They don't want to keep them down. And I'm for business, but being for business doesn't mean I'm for making people wage slaves. And I had people talk to me about how, you know, there wasn't, you know, in the turn of the century, you know, how things weren't so great for working people in the North, and they weren't. Of course not. I'm not saying it was. The life of a wage slave in turn of the century, New York City or Boston, was practically little better than it was than a slave's life. In the 1880s, too, during the Industrial Revolution, you know, when you had child labor or before child labor laws. But you know what? The difference is between the North and the South is that when push came to shove, the people stood up for themselves and they fought for their rights and they got them. And for some reason, Southerners seem to resent that. I brought up the air traffic controllers earlier on. You know, I know a lot of people down here that just laughed at that. And they thought, aha, you got fired. And they didn't realize that that blow that was struck then, and that was over 20 years ago, that blow that was struck then affected them and would affect them eventually. How I lost my job here in Atlanta, I was working for Siemens, which a lot of people don't, you know Siemens. It's a big, big company. And I worked at one of their just basic manufacturing plants. We manufactured electrical circuit boxes. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the most intellectually stimulating work at all, but it was a decent job. I made $13 an hour, which is damn good for down here in Atlanta for an unskilled type of job. We were a union. We were IBEW, even though I wasn't too fond of the particular union leadership at the local, but that's all right. Because there was a union, people had benefits and people had better working conditions. And that shop closed up, and they're now in Mexico. And as I mentioned earlier, the big GM plant, General Motors plant up in Doraville, and that employs a few thousand people, that's closing up shop and moving to Mexico. We've got a Ford Motor Company plant down south, just south of Atlanta, just by the airport. And they're closing up shop and moving to Mexico. And you keep wondering where people are going to work down here. And you wonder what the future of the city is going to be. And I want to stay and help. I really, really do. But you know what? If I can't earn a living down here, I simply can't. And I got a lot of, you know, people say, well, don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. Delta was ready when you are, blah, 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 blah. You know, I've been down here for 12 years. It's not like I just came down here for a couple of weeks or so and tried to make it and said, you know what, screw you. Well, you know, it's been 12 years. And I'd be happy to stay down here for even longer if I can only find a decent job. But the only jobs down here are crap jobs that don't pay enough, that you work way too hard on. And you get no respect from anybody. And a friend of mine from the BART Cop chat room, and hi to all my friends listening there, by the way, in the IRC BART Cop chat room, you know, he said, look, I got a place up here in Chicago, and if you want to come up here, you can stay up here. So I'm getting ready to put a lot of my stuff in storage, basically, or get rid of it to charity or sell off to wherever, taking the bare minimum and just going up to Chicago and make a new life for myself. That shouldn't affect the show, by the way. The guy up there has an internet connection, and hopefully it won't cause any change and what I'm doing here. Maybe just a little delay in some in some stuff, but nothing more than what we've had before. So, anyway, we're going on a quarter hour here. And let's take a little break. And then we'll take your phone calls. And we'll talk for tomorrow. All right, we'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
just a kid.
I'm six.
I'm nine.
I'm four and a half.
And I've got asthma.
You know just how upset I can get when I have an asthma attack.
And I know that you want to do all that you can do to help me.
But you might not know about all the different stuff that can make me have an asthma attack.
Or all the simple things you can do to fight my asthma.
You can fight it with a bear.
You can fight it with a duck.
You can fight it with a wrench.
Put my teddy bear in the freezer to wipe out dust mites.
Dry off rubber duckies and fix leaks to get rid of mold.
Cause mold can start my asthma attacks too.
Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Thanks for doing all you can to help me out.
Because I don't want to feel like a fish with no water.
Hey everyone, it's Dar Williams. I just signed on to a new program called Empower. If you think you or a friend might have a mental health problem, call 1-800-969-6642 or visit empoweryouth.org.
I'm a sophomore at college this year, but when I was a sophomore in high school, I gave all my teachers a bad time. Most of them, I guess, just threw up their hands, except for my English teacher.
8 years teaching high school English, 10 years in recovery for alcohol addiction.
To be or not to be.
I got help.
That's it right there.
When you get help, who knows just who you'll help along the way.
For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral for you or someone you know, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Hello?
Hi, Bill? This is George Dewey from up the street.
Oh, hey, George. How you doing?
Good, good. Say, I noticed you've been walking to work these days instead of driving. And I don't quite know how to say this, but...
But what?
But your butt. Your buttocks. Your butt. I think I found your butt on my front lawn. Have you recently lost it?
As a matter of fact, I have, George. It's about time someone noticed.
Well, it was kind of hard to miss, if you know what I mean. Anyways, would you like it back?
Would I like it back? No, not really.
So it's okay if I throw it out?
Sure, that's fine. Take it easy, George.
Small step number 8. Walk instead of driving whenever you can. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to help you become a healthier, well, you. Get started at www.smallstep.gov and take a small step to get healthy.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Okay, and we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. And once again, I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, and the number to call in is 1-877-443-2366. In between the breaks there, I was watching the Braves games are getting their butts kicked royally. That's going to be two they're going to lose to Arizona tonight. Ugh. Okay, let's just go right to the phone. Gene from Oregon, you're on line one. Pull up a chair and have a cup of Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Gene.
I just had a quick comment on your thing about the South. And
sure.
This is what scares me. Now, I'm a northerner, and I haven't been down south since I was 7, although I lived in Tucson, Arizona, but that's not the South.
no, that's the West.
Yeah. But what I see about this whole thing is that attitude of arrogance that you see in the South now, it's going to eventually, especially, you know, when we lose the election and 2006, and I'm kind of along your lines, because we really haven't done anything to really change things like that. If we really go down, and I can see that we are, we're going to have that same kind of live in the past attitude that the Southerners have. And what scares me is with the global warming and stuff that people don't believe in down there, they're going to have to migrate up here to get water. So,
well, you know, fresh water. It's going to be a continuing problem, too. You know, we talk about oil, but as the global temperature rises, as the more the ice caps melt and flows into the ocean, I guess fresh water could become a serious, serious problem in the future, 50, 60 years from now.
Yeah, and people, they have to have water, so where the heck are they going to go but up here? So it'll be interesting. And if you see me when I'm about 75, if I live that long, hanging down I-5 with something in my hand, to, you'll forgive me. Anyway, that's
a little
something. Anyway, I'll talk to you later.
All right, take care. Thanks a lot for that, Gene.
Sure.
And yeah, that's really good. You know, and it's funny because here's the thing about, you know, Gore's movie has just come out, and it is it's called An Inconvenient Truth, and it's showing only in 77 theaters in the country. And I don't want to make this clear, 77 theaters in the country. It is the number 9 film of the week right now, according to BoxOfficeMojo.com, which tracks daily box office receipts and all that stuff. It is the number 9 movie in the country. And that's in only 77 theaters. You know how many theaters the other movies that are in? That are up there? The number 10 movie, this is Just My Luck, made $250,000. An Inconvenient Truth made $410,000. On Friday. Okay? And it made $410,000. The number 10 film is a movie called Just My Luck, which I'm not familiar with at all. That was in 958 theaters, and it made $250,000. A movie they've been advertising like crazy, number 12, Aquila and the Bee, about the young girl doing doing a spelling bee. That's in 405 theaters, and that's made $125,000. And all the big movies, all the movies above Inconvenient Truth, which are See No Evil, RV, Poseidon Adventure, Mission Impossible, Da Vinci Code, Over the Head, X-Men, and The Breakup, you're talking in the thousands. The lowest one I see here is See No Evil, which is in 1,200 theaters, 1,270 theaters. So there's people want to hear this. There's definitely an audience for this. This is unbelievable numbers. These are unbelievable numbers for a documentary. Stuff that hasn't been seen since Fahrenheit 9/11. And, you know, and I certainly hope that we can pull ourselves out of this. But like I said earlier, look, reality tends to bite you in the ass. And the reality of the situation is that we have 6 billion people on this planet, and that we're consuming a lot of energy, and that energy has an effect on the environment we live in. The world population reached 1 billion in something like 1880, somewhere around there. That's 125 years ago. And over those 125 years, the population has gone up 6 times. We went from 1 billion to 6 billion. And we're talking 125 years. And that's nothing. That's nothing. So, you know, you can talk all you want about, you know, it's all a lie, it's all stuff, you know, blah, blah, blah. And really, you're not helping yourself. And I mentioned the fresh water issue. That could be a serious issue. That could be a serious friggin' issue. You remember in oil. Because, you know, we could probably find a way to survive without oil, even though it's the driving force of our technology today. We could probably find a way around it. But we're not going to be able to survive without water. But to continue on what I was talking about, and in fact, it goes on to what I was talking about, the press, and how they're going to malign anybody. And they're already, of course, starting again on Gore, because Gore is now, you know, people have been talking about maybe he ought to run. And I want to read you this excerpt, and I got this again from Digby, but this is an excerpt from Eric Boehlerts, and I hope I pronounced that correctly, Boehlerts. Incredible book, Lapdogs, about how the press is basically just, you know, sucking up to the right. He said, the mainstream media's unique brand of journalism, unveiled just for Bush, represented precisely the kind of chubby, get-along reporting that would have been roundly mocked by journalists themselves just a few years earlier. During the Clinton years, the D.C. newsroom sin was to be seen as soft on Democrats, a Clinton apologist, and journalists went to extraordinary lengths to prove their mettle by staying up late night chasing Whitewater rumors and trying to prove the White House gave away weapons secrets to the Chinese in exchange for campaign contributions. The phrase double standard barely begins to describe the titanic shift that occurred and how Bush and his Republican administration were covered by the suddenly timorous press corps. It's hard to believe the Bush-era slumbering press was the same one that a decade earlier shifted into overdrive when bogus allegations flew that President Clinton caused the commercial airplanes to back up at L.A. International Airport while he received a $200 from a celebrity stylist aboard Air Force One. Federal Aviation Administration records later showed that there was no such delays, but that didn't stop the Washington Post from referencing this silly incident 50-plus times in less than 30 days, treating the hoax as a serious political story. The Post staff managed to squeeze in nearly 100 Clinton haircut references during the 1993 calendar year. And then again, just 4 months into his first home, the Post published a lengthy mocking feature on Clinton's soft approval ratings. The failed Clinton presidency, they called it. It has a certain ring to it. Yet in 2005, when Bush's job approval ratings plunged into the 30s, the Post refused to print the phrase failed presidency to describe Bush's second term. To do so would simply invite conservative scorn, something the newsroom seemed to be going through extraordinary lengths to avoid. Anyway, that's the way that stuff is. You know, that's the state of the press that we have right now. And any Democrat that comes into prominence is going to be on the receiving end of that. It doesn't matter who. It doesn't matter who it is, how conservative they are. Jack Murtha, for crying out loud, a decorated war veteran, gets accused of being soft on war. John Kerry, regardless of what you think of his politics, John Kerry was a war hero, serving in some of those dangerous areas of Vietnam. And how does he get treated? How did they treat our veterans with their little Band-Aid Purple Hearts? Did anybody see that? Did anybody see that? Was anybody as sickened by that as I was? Man, oh man. And any Democrat that comes up is going to get that. And these people make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, some of them. Especially when you're talking about the television personalities. They make a lot of money. While anybody who's a serious journalist, who's trying to tell the truth, winds up getting dumped on and not being able to work. It's just sickening. And as far as I'm concerned, the press is complicit with what's going on in this administration. They're complicit. And if and when the time comes that we have another war crimes tribunal like we had at Nuremberg for the Nazis, then I think the press ought to be put on trial. What was the name of that newspaper? Der Sturm, I think it was called. It was a German newspaper that was incredibly pro-Nazi and anti-Semitic and everything you would expect. And the editor of that, the publisher of that, he was put on trial just as well as the Nazi leaders, the political leaders and the military leaders. Just like that. And I think we ought to put, you know, if push comes to shove, we ought to put Chris Matthews on trial. And who's that other guy? All these talking heads, especially Bill O'Reilly. Did you hear this thing about Bill O'Reilly? I got to say this. Keith Olbermann got on him for that. Bill O'Reilly was trying to downplay, as usual, the Hadatha disaster. And he was pointing out a story in some place during World War II where Bill O'Reilly was saying that it was American soldiers who shot Nazis and left them to die. Like, it was no big deal. It happens all the time. Of course, it was completely backwards. It was Nazi soldiers who shot Americans in the head and left them to die. So what do you expect from scumbags such as Bill O'Reilly? And he gets a lot of money. He gets a lot of money for calling people cowards. And he gets a lot of money for being a traitor to his country, which is what he basically is. Hey, I see by the clock on the wall, it's the bottom of the hour. We got to have another little break. And I'll talk some more about this and about the press. And we'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show.
Void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
If we do not take responsibility for saving animals from extinction, we allow a part of ourselves to die with them, because in the web of life,
and if I pass,
we are all connected.
Again, you can rest assured.
Help World Wildlife Fund protect animals and the places where they live by ordering a free action kit. Together, we can leave our children a living planet.
She said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.
What do nurses, teachers, and moms all have in common?
We help kids grow,
learn, and thrive.
And they are all being targeted by Governor Schwarzenegger in this year's budget. Governor Schwarzenegger used to be known as an action hero. But what kind of hero targets moms and families to bear the brunt of budget cuts? In fact, the governor is choosing corporations over California's hardworking mothers. 70% of California's corporations pay no taxes at all, while the single biggest budget cut this year is to programs that benefit hardworking moms and their families, like child care, CalWORKs, and Medi-Cal. Governor Schwarzenegger, did you know that 92% of nurses and 76% of teachers are women? Stop targeting California's moms and kids. For more information, please call the California Partnership at 562-862-2070. Brought to you by the California Partnership. On the web at california-partnership.org.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
It was one against, I don't know, probably 10. By the time they were done, his neck was red.
Oh, I am afraid to go to high school.
It scares me.
I have a knife and you don't. Ha, 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 ha.
There was this kid that was like 17, or he came to a school with a gun.
We didn't know if it was fake or real.
Our children need our help to deal with tough issues, like violence. Please, talk with your kids.
For a free booklet, call 1-800-CHILD-44. Brought to you by the Kaiser Family Foundation, Children Now, and the Ad Council.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show once more. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Last half hour of the show here, and we're heading down the home stretch. Please give me a call. The number is 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. And I hope to hear from you. We've had some good phone calls tonight, and of course, some of our regulars coming in too. I love getting a call from Gunny Bob up there in North Dakota. I love having him on the show. And you know, it's funny because we get a lot of veterans calling too. And I'm a veteran. I've said this before. I'm not pro military, but I'm pro loyalty as far as putting your money where your mouth is, as far as your country is concerned. And I'm not going to lie. I did join the military mostly because I needed the work at the time. It was the early 80s, and there were not a lot of good jobs out there for me. I just graduated from high school a couple years before, and there wasn't anything going on. And my dad said, Joe, why don't you join the Army? And I said, okay. And actually what I did was I joined the Army Reserve, and I was in the Army Reserve for 2 or 3 years, and then I wanted to go active duty, but not active Army, so I went into the Air Force. And I went in as a cryptolinguist. For those of you who don't know what that is, that's a very, very difficult school. Cryptology and linguistics, basically, and learning codes. And our job would be to listen to foreign transmissions and decode them if necessary to get information, you know, military intelligence sort of things. And I was studying Korean. Unfortunately, I flunked out of it. The DLI, the Defense Language Institute, which is, by the way, the best language school probably in the world, they have like a 90% dropout rate. Very, very high. And language is a skill. Language, it doesn't matter how intelligent you are or how stupid you are in some cases. It really is a specific skill. And if you're going to learn a new language, the best time to learn it would be when you're very, very young, when you're still in your formative years, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, stuff like that. That's when you start picking up languages. And that's why, you know, if you go to places in, you know, Eastern Europe, Central Europe, you have people there who speak 5 or 6 different languages, because you can grow up in that area and you can go 5 miles down the road and somebody's speaking a different language. And you can go 5 miles in any direction and someone's speaking a different language. So you pick up 5 or 6 languages just by sheer necessity of it. And, you know, speaking of stupid things, they brought up some of our callers brought up the gay marriage thing. One of the other stupid things is the one that they did recently to try to make English the official language of the country. I mean, first of all, it's ridiculous. We don't need an official language. Everybody speaks English for the most part. But the number two language is Spanish. And there's every indication that there are going to be more and more Hispanic people living in this country. And there might be a time where the majority of the people in the country speak Spanish. I hope not, because I suck at Spanish. Excuse me. I think I have a drink of water here. I'm drinking water. I'm trying to cut down on my Mountain Dew. Too much caffeine. Too much caffeine starting to go after me. But no, what was I saying? Yeah, it's just more stupid stuff just by people who are trying to get their base activated. Like, you know, they're not going to get the gay marriage thing passed. I mean, you can't have a constitutional amendment that basically allows discrimination. And that's what it would be. That's exactly what it would be. And what would happen if there was a majority of people that spoke Spanish and decided they wanted to make Spanish the national language? And what would happen then? Or, you know, if you look at California, specifically California, there's almost more Asians living in California than there are anybody else. What if they decided that they wanted to be an all-Asian majority? And that if you're not in that majority, then you're going to get second-class citizen status. Sure, a lot of the white people wouldn't care for that very much. When you live in rule of law, you have to have majority rule, of course, but you have to respect the rights of the minority. You have to respect the rights of the minority, because otherwise you have tyranny. Jefferson said that. That was his first inaugural address. And the people who want this to be a theocracy, they don't understand that the First Amendment, the freedom of religion, that protects them as well as us. And the term separation of church and state, which some people are saying, well, that's not in the Constitution. Well, not that phrase in particular, but the First Amendment spells out very clearly the role of religion in this country. You can worship who you want, how you want. And the government will not endorse any particular church. The government will not be the church. There's no official church. It's called the Establishment Clause. They will not establish a church as the official church of the country. The term separation of state, church and state, comes from a letter that Jefferson was writing to the conservatives of his time, the evangelical conservative Christians of his time, who were concerned of the American government having a specific religion, because they were afraid that they would be on the bottom end of that. But of course, the conservatives right now, the conservative Christians, they want a theocracy. There are some people that really do want a theocracy. I have a term that I'm going to use in an upcoming post called democracy fatigue. And it happens to nations, to republics, that have, after a couple of hundred years or so, been a republic and become an empire. And this is a very critical time. We have to fight back this urge to just say government sucks and we'll let other people run it and we don't have any part of it because it's always corrupt. If we give in to that thought, then we'll fall by the wayside. We'll be just as bad as the Athenians and the Romans afterwards. And those were the other two major democratic republics that came up in world history. I'm sure there were others somewhere, but the Greeks and the Romans were the two biggest. And it's remarkable that nearly everything we know about how we live our lives still comes from ideas and policies and activities put out by the Greeks and the Romans. And that's over 2,500 years ago we're talking about. And I'm a big fan of Greek history. And I got a little bit more to say about that a little later on. But if you look at this, if you look at the wholeness of what's going on here in this country, and I try to look at things as in a much larger sense than a lot of other people do, because a lot of people, they just see their own lives and how things affect their own lives. And that's one of the big problems when you have a country with a population this size. It's hard to see the big picture. But really, I think this is a stage that we almost kind of have to go through. That we've got to reach a point where we became the dominant nation of the world, and it was a question of how we were going to wield that power. And while there were liberals in charge, people who believe in the rule of law and in a community of nations and a community of people as opposed to one small group of people running everything, then we did fairly well. We weren't perfect. I'm not trying to claim we were perfect. The New Deal didn't stretch out far enough as far as I'm concerned. It didn't include the blacks, didn't include the gays, didn't include the atheists or the agnostics. Everybody like that was second-class citizens. But as soon as the opportunity arose, conservatism is not a word. I got to remember that. The old conservatism reared its ugly head again. And conservatism is basically where you allow one small group of people to run the show. That's what it eventually boils down to. Never mind what somebody says it is in terms of, freedom and independence. It's got nothing to do with that. Conservatism is basically, in its most basic form, is a love for the past. And a desire for the past above and beyond the present and the future. That's why the Southerners are more conservative than we are. They're living in the past more than I am, that's for sure, because I'm always thinking about the future, because the future is, where we're living, man. George Carlin had a great routine about that. He was talking about it. He said that there is no now. He said there's no such thing as now. Everything is either the the recent past or the near future. And he had this wonderful little thing. He said, there's a moment coming. It's almost here. Here it is. Here it is. It's gone. And that's it. Time flows. Time moves. The past is important to learn from our mistakes and to see what we did right and repeat it. But when you live in the past, like the Southerners do, like a lot of Southerners do, then you hurt yourself because you can't see above and beyond that. And when I look at the big picture, as far as this country is concerned, I just see this going through a particular stage. And the question is, how bad is it going to get before it reverses itself? Because it's going to reverse itself eventually. But there's a difference now. Because of the environment and because of the impending threat of nuclear holocaust. Yes, nuclear holocaust. If we drop a bomb on Iran, especially if we drop a nuke in Iran, that could have some very, very serious consequences because there's still a lot of nukes hanging around there. Okay, it's quarter till, and we're coming up on our last break here. And before we do that, let me give you the phone numbers again real quick, because if you want to call in for the last 15 minutes, that's fine. 1-877-443-2366. I always get tongue-tied in that. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. Okay, let's take a break. We'll be back.
Provided over 292 million ounces of $70 million U.S. government assistance package for Central America in response to Hurricane Mitch.
Sometimes it seems like we spend an awful lot of our tax money helping people in other countries. But in reality, it's less than 1% of our government's annual budget. Our aid programs save lives by helping couples plan their families, immunizing children against deadly diseases, and ensuring that people have safe drinking water. It's important that these programs continue. Helping create a healthy and secure future for people in developing countries helps us here at home, too, by ensuring a more peaceful and prosperous world. Call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support our foreign aid programs. That's 202-224-3121. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
I'm a new mother. My baby and I are healthy and happy. But I was shocked to learn that every minute a woman somewhere in the world dies in pregnancy or childbirth. When women can't plan when to get pregnant, or even how many children to have, it puts them and their babies at risk. We can lower these risks for just pennies a day. I'm proud that our government supports programs that help mothers and their families around the world. If you are too, call your U.S. Senators and Representative today at 202-224-3121 and tell them you support U.S. assistance for voluntary family planning programs worldwide. That's 202-224-3121. For the cost of the pennies we see lying on our sidewalks, we can make a real difference. This message brought to you by Population Action International.
show. Once more, your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man, voice of the radical middle, voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, I want to thank Agnes for all her hard work in putting together this show. You know, like I said, I've been watching the Braves game during the breaks, and the Braves were down 8-2. And then 10-2, and now they're back. It's 10-9 in the seventh inning. So hopefully they can pull this out. I'm a big Braves. I'm a big baseball fan. I always have been since I was a little kid. I grew up in Brooklyn, like I said. And in Brooklyn, baseball isn't a sport. It's a religion, you know. And I love baseball. I've always loved baseball. I'm a true blue American guy, despite what the right wing says about me. Where was I? There were so many things going on. There was, there's something I want to bring up, and I wanted to talk about this. There was a guy on myleftwing.com who had a very, very good post about something called the Godwin Divide. And basically, the Godwin Divide is a term that's used to denote the particular point at which an analogy drawn to Hitler or the Nazis is no longer simply gratuitous or fatuous, but reasoned and appropriate. And a lot of people have been, you know, liking the Bush people and his administration to the Nazi party. But really, it's not a fair comparison, because Nazis are a specific brand of fascism. You know, we are fascist in this country now. I mean, it's not full-blown fascism yet. But we have all of... what was the guy's name? He had 14 different tendencies, 14 different characteristics of fascism. Mike Malloy had a good rant on that. One day I'll read them all off. But in every way, in all 14 ways, America is exhibiting these characteristics. And we're not to the point of having like a Kristallnacht or you know, the big Nuremberg rallies. Although if you look at some of the other things that are going on, they do having rallies like that. There was, I remember reading on a blog about these Christian youth rallies, where they actually have ex-Special Forces guys come in and, you know, in full uniform and act like, you know, we're at war and stuff like that. And it's really, really kind of creepy. Kind of like our own little version of the Hitler Youth. And it's really kind of scary. And you wonder to what lengths they're going to go in the long run if you know, if they get taken out again politically. I still believe, and I'll keep saying it until something happens to prove it otherwise, that there's going to be massive amounts of election fraud in 2006, and that because of that, we're going to... what was I going to say? Because of that, we're not going to win back the House and the Senate. And I'm going to hear a lot of people whining and complaining and moaning, what are we doing wrong? You know, you haven't done anything wrong. And that's what I'm trying to explain to you. This is not a negative or defeatist attitude. You have to understand the nature of the enemy. And I believe in being positive, and I believe in being optimistic. But in order to do that properly, you absolutely, positively have to make a realistic assessment of what's going on. And a left-wing version of clap louder is not the answer. But anyway, I was going to point out real quick, because we've only got a few more minutes here before we have to go. And by the way, it's going to be Fourth Estate Radio on afterwards with John Fox, my good friend down under, and Bruce Birch, who I don't know if he's still out in California or not. I'm not sure. But Fourth Estate Radio will be on at 10 o'clock right after my show. And we're glad to have them. We're glad for all of the shows on here. For Bob Kincaid, of course, and primarily because Bob is the founder of the Head On Network. And for John Fox and Bruce Birch, and Birch does All Things Reconsidered. And for Guy James, and for everybody else who's on the Head On Network. But let me get to my point before we run out of time here. There was something that happened 2,500 years ago in Athens, during the Peloponnesian War, and I want to point this out. And I wanted to bring it up in context with the point about the Godwin thing, about Nazism. And it's just the reality that this is human nature. This has been going on for 2,500 years. What the Nazis did wasn't any different from what was going on 2,500 years ago. And Basically, and I'll try to make it as quick as possible. The Athenians were at war with Sparta, and who were their ancient enemy. And what they were doing was they were taking over islands and lands that used to be under Spartan control. The Spartans ruled the land. They couldn't take Athens itself because Athens was too well protected by its walls. And they couldn't take it from the Navy point of view because Athens' Navy ruled the Mediterranean Sea at the time. Now, there was an island called Melos who used to be a tributary to Sparta. They weren't voluntarily that way. The Spartans conquered them. And the Athenians went and took them over, and they said, basically, well, you're our slaves now. You're our tributary now. But the Melians didn't want to be that way. And they asked for the chance to negotiate terms. And this is a short excerpt of it. It's called the Melian Dialogues, and I know Bob Kincaid knows about it because we talked about it once on his show. And basically it went something like this. The Athenians said, there's no point bothering you with the same old story about how we have a right to our empire because of our military, or tell you that we're attacking you because of something you did to us. We won't bore you with a long speech which you wouldn't believe anyway. So since we both know exactly what's going on, we hope you'll just make it easy for both of us, accept it for what it is, and make the best of it. You know as well as we do that this is how the world is. Rights only come into play between equals in power. The strong do whatever they want, and everyone else does whatever they can. And that is basically the attitude we have now from the Bush administration. That's the attitude that the Nazis took when they gained political power. These are people who know nothing but how to grab power, and the only thing they know what to do with it when they have it is to grab more power. There's no vision behind it. And I think it's a biblical quote. I heard it from Lincoln. It said, when there's no vision, the people die. And I'm getting messages from Agnes, lovely Agnes Kincaid, out there in West Virginia, saying that we have to put an end to it. And, it was a good show tonight. I was glad. Even though I got stuck here by myself again, I got to get more people on. Next week, we're going to have Mark Crispin Miller on. At least he's promised, anyway, to be on. And we're going to talk more about the election fraud coming up in 2006, and he's got a new book about that. Fourth Estate Radio is coming up next. Thanks again to Agnes for producing the show out of West Virginia. And this is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe radio show for the Head On Radio Network, signing off for this week. Until next week, bye. I'll lick a spoon of sugar. Do I need to go on? I want a cup of joe.